Chapter 6 Talon.
More bloody refugees? Hells, the city's already at capacity as it is.
Talon regards the Nightingale runner, who merely shrugs and urges his horse down the road to deliver the message to the rest of camp.
Don't know how they're going to feed 'em all.
Tail, a young Nightingale fighter, mutters from atop his mount beside Talon. He proceeds to lean over the side of his saddle and spit a large wad of phlegm into the grass.
Seems like the whole bloody kingdom has moved out this way.
Talon absently rubs the still tender stump of his wrist.
Nobody wants to be near the wastes, Tail. With the Ark gone, it's only a matter of time before the demons start moving in. Even piss-poor farmers on the edge of nowhere can understand that much.
They gaze at the western road, which stretches into the dismal heartlands, and the low-hanging clouds that seem so common lately.
Ain't gonna be good, that many people cooped up together. I'd hate to be around when the food starts to run out,
Tail groans.
You forget one important fact, my simple friend.
Scrunching up his whiskered face, Tail shoots Talon a sidelong glance.
What's that? We're probably not going to live long enough for the food to run out.
Talon flashes him a grin.
Come on, let's go welcome these newcomers to their new home.
He digs his heels into his horse's flanks, spurring her forward as Tail stares after him, a look of confusion on his face. Eventually, he too spurs his horse into action, riding behind him toward the distant speck of travelers to the west.
Tail's a good enough fellow, Talon thinks as he rides. He can hold his liquor and play a decent hand of cards, but he's not much of a conversationalist.
His mother probably dropped him on his head too many times when he was a baby.
He glances back at the Nightingale scout and gives him an encouraging nod.
Still, he keeps his sword sharp and his armor well-oiled. He's got enough scars to prove he's a decent fighter. I suppose I could have done worse as far as companions are concerned. Now that Owen is gone.
The white flag Tail carries whips violently in the wind, but both men keep their hands close to their swords just in case.
You never know what sort of sod you'll meet out on the road, Talon muses.
Ever since coming back to the city, Elias has had the Nightingales on high alert, treating them as guards, watching all western roads leading into the city. With the recent influx of refugees from all corners of Tarsinium, the job is a much-needed one.
Though I wish it didn't fall to me, Talon thinks, and not for the first time. I'd rather be back at the camp than out here, a deck of cards in one hand and a flagon of ale in the other.
He glances down at his stump and grimaces.
Every bloody time. Getting along without a hand is like having a constant hangover. It aches and makes doing even the most menial tasks difficult.
Only a constant stream of alcohol has made being a cripple bearable for him, the ale keeping him blessedly numb while the world falls apart. The worst part by far has been relearning how to fight. Rangers, even apprentices, are not worth very much if they can't hold their own in battle. He can still fire a crossbow well enough, but can't reload without help. The longsword has never been his strong suit, and dual-wielding short swords, which had been his forte, are now out of the question. This left him with only one option, the spear and shield, a decidedly unattractive yet utilitarian combination. The Nightingale smith had created a special bracer for his arm capable of holding a shield, and the master-at-arms had gone through great lengths to ensure that he receives the proper training in spearcraft. The grueling exercises have made him almost wish for a swift death at the hands of some demon.
One short sword will do for now, he thinks. None of these frightened border folk pose any threat to us anyway. That cursed spear can rot back at camp for all I care.
As they draw near to the oncoming travelers, he notices that this is one of the larger groups they've come across lately. Most incoming refugees have been individual families or small bands of farmers, a steady trickle rather than a flood. Even so, the stream of bodies coming from all directions has created something of a crisis in the city. They pull their horses to a stop in the middle of the road, waiting for the caravan to come to them. Despite the wintry cold, an unusually warm wind howls in their ears, until, as emotionless as a board, sits straight-backed with his pole in the stirrup, the blank standard snapping in the air above his head. "Well over 100," Talon mutters, resting a hand on the saddle horn. "Maybe even 2 or 3. What do you think, Tail? Forest Hill?" He grunts in response, but doesn't offer a guess of his own. "All right, then," Talon says, heaving a sigh. "Do me a favor and let me do the talking. You just sit there and look menacing." Tail hawks, spitting over the edge of his saddle once more.
"Aye, if you say so,"
Talon grimaces. "I think it would be for the best." The head of the long column pulls to a halt in front of them, a fat, bald man in rich clothing eyeing them warily at the head of the group. His horse, a well-groomed palfrey, seems unfettered by his enormous girth, and the yokels behind him look around nervously, obviously concerned by their presence.
"Hail, good sir," Talon calls out genially. "I hope this day finds you well."
"Hail," the large man replies, frowning in confusion. "I say, what's the meaning of this?"
"Sorry to delay your journey," Talon says, "but we've been tasked with speaking with all those on the road this day, especially those making for Tarsus."
Despite the chill in the air, the man pulls out a handkerchief and dabs his forehead.
"You don't wear the king's colors. Who are you to stop us?"
Talon flashes him a broad smile.
"The king? Oh, no, good sir. We're not agents of the king. I'm Talon, a ranger's apprentice, and this fellow to my left is Tail, a nightingale."
"Nightingale?"
the man asks, alarmed.
"Good gracious."
"No need to be afraid," Talon says. "We're not here to rob you or anything, just to relay some information."
The nervous man wipes his bald pate again and smiles uneasily.
"I've had dealings with the nightingales in the past," he remarks. "Still, one can never be too careful, these days especially."
"Of course," Talon replies dryly. "And your name is?"
"Governor Pryor of Forest Hill."
"Ah, Governor Pryor. I'm pleased to make your acquaintance."
Talon takes a deep breath and delves into his oft-practiced speech.
"Well, let me get down to it. Tarsus is filling up fast with refugees from all around the country. There's simply no more room to shelter anyone else within the walls. Areas around the city have been quartered off to accommodate..."
He trails off as he sees a pair of figures emerge from the caravan, their clothing dirty and worn. One of them is tall and lean, in supple leathers and a gray-green cloak like his own. The other is a slender young woman wearing tattered blue mage robes, pretty, with straight chestnut hair. Upon seeing him, they stop, surprised expressions mirroring the one on his own face.
"Thrice burn me and call me a Gorgon," Talon exclaims, laughing uproariously. "Oh, and London, Zara Denel! Back from the dead to aid us in the 11th hour!"
Leaping from his saddle, he races over to meet them, throwing his arms wide to embrace them both.
"It's good to see you too, Talon," Owen says, grinning and patting him on the shoulder. "How have you been lately?"
"How have I been?" he responds incredulously. "Well, let me think. Aside from the collapse of the Ark, the death of the king, and the looming threat of worldwide destruction, I think I've been doing fairly well. 11 hells, how about you two?"
Zara perks up.
"The king's dead?"
"Aye," Talon replies. "The old master saw to that, Owen. Did him in good with that favorite knife of his."
The townsfolk in earshot mutter darkly amongst themselves.
"Elias murdered the king?"
The governor visibly pales.
This is an outrage. He'll surely hang for—"
"Keep your shirt on, governor," Talon interrupts, waving his hand. "Nobody's hanging for anything, especially not after everything that's happened. Aethelgard dying was the best possible solution to all of this insanity. Now we might actually have a fighting chance."
The bald man blusters incoherently, but Talon turns his back on him to face Owen and Zara, his smile returning.
It's so good to see you two. Honestly. When you disappeared, we all feared the worst. After Elias told us that you'd been exiled, I thought I'd never see you again.
A lot's happened in our absence, it seems, Zara replies, reaching to fiddle with the crystal hanging from her neck, a cruder version of the ones Talon's seen her carry around.
How did Elias get a chance to kill the king? Owen asks. I thought the Rangers were going to court-martial him for his connection to the Nightingales.
Talon shrugs.
They absolved Elias of his crimes. He returned to our camp in the Heartlands and then commanded a mission to take out the king.
Owen frowns. Commanded?
That's right. After old Xander Thel's death, the Nightingales elected him to be their new protector. With a little help from yours truly.
He cuts a mock bow, his smile turning into a wry grin. Both Owen's and Zara's mouths drop open in shock.
I know, Talon says. It's a lot to take in. Worry not. We'll have lots of time to catch up on the road to Tarsus. I want a mug of ale and a detailed explanation of how you survived in the wastes.
He sniffs, then crinkles his nose in distaste.
After the two of you wash up, of course.
Zara scowls, but Owen merely nods, agreeing with his astute observation.
I'm feeling all warm and fuzzy seeing you lot together, Tail calls from his horse behind them. But if you're done being all sentimental, we need to head back to camp. The sun's going down, and there's reports of demons about.
He's right, Talon replies. We need to start heading back. Not safe to be out on the roads after dark. Refugees aren't allowed within the city, but I think we can carve out some space outside. That's what everyone else is doing anyway. Setting up tents at the base of the walls. Come on, let's get moving. We've a way to go yet.
The caravan continues eastward, making its way inexorably toward Tarsus. Tail races off ahead of them to notify the Nightingale camp, and Talon remains behind to walk beside Owen and Zara on the road. They regale him with tales of their exploits, expounding on their unlikely survival and their integration with the Wastelanders. They tell him about ferocious quill demons, the discovery of a large node of source crystal in the hills just beyond the Ark, and the army that's now bearing down on Tarsinium, bent on its annihilation. When they finish, all Talon can do is shake his head in wonder.
That's quite the tale, he says in amazement. An adventure for the bloody storybooks. It makes my own seem downright boring in comparison.
I would have preferred boring, I think, Zara remarks.
Yeah, Owen says. It didn't feel like a storybook when we were wandering the desert, running from manticores, gorgons, and the like. I'd rather have been here with the Rangers and the Nightingales, and to see Elias become protector and witness the overthrow of King Æthelgar.
It's not like I saw the king get killed, Talon admits grudgingly. I spent most of my time in camp, and honestly, I was drunk for the major part of it. Cripples don't really come in handy when it comes to fighting.
He waves his stump to emphasize his point. Owen groans.
Handy? Lightel, that was terrible. You don't ever quit, do you?
Talon can't suppress the grin splitting his face.
Just admit it. You two missed my unwavering sense of humor.
Missed is a strong word, Zara says. I'd say we tolerate your sense of humor, Talon, childish though it may be. Her expression is as cool as any mage's, but her eyes betray her mirth, and Talon can see the corner of her mouth threatening to quirk up into an actual smile. They continue chatting amiably as the countryside passes them by, pastoral farmhouses and their suspicious-looking occupants appearing in greater frequency the further east they travel. By the time the sun finally drops below the horizon, they're within sight of the Nightingale camp. The sprawling sea of earthen defenses and tents stretches out across the heartlands on the north side of the road, just a few miles from the outskirts of the city. In the land roundabout, every village, roadside inn, and field has been overrun, buried by an avalanche of refugees from all over the kingdom.
Ramshackle buildings made from wagons and canvas have sprouted like mushrooms after a rainstorm, and campfires can be seen like fallen stars all over the darkening plain. Owen lets out a low whistle.
"Light almighty," Zara gasps. "I've never seen so many people in one place. The outlying towns must have completely emptied."
"Some hundreds more come in every day," Talon replies. "As you can see, things are getting a bit crowded here. We've been having a hard time just keeping order. Most folks aren't too keen on the idea of nightingales patrolling the camps, even with the Conclave's permission."
"It's extraordinary," she continues, as if she hadn't heard him. "What effect will this have on the city? Surely there isn't enough food to go around. And what will become of everyone once the R'hllar arrive? Light, the city can't possibly hold so many people."
"That's for all the important people to figure out," Talon says with a grunt. "The rest of us, well, we just need to take things one day at a time. Come on, let's get off this blasted road. I think the lot of you have earned a good rest."
With the help of some sentries, Talon manages to find a suitable place for the newcomers to camp, the desert people keeping mostly to themselves amid the sea of refugees. Zara exchanges some words with them, surprising Talon with her ability to speak their language, and then Owen and she return with Talon to the fortified encampment of the Nightingales. As they pass the bulwarks, they are hailed by many of the guards.
"We can head into the city tomorrow," Talon says, leading them to a pair of empty tents. "Elias is already there, negotiating with the nobles and members of the Conclave."
"And how are things going for him?" Owen asks. Talon shakes his head.
"It's a bloody mess, I tell you. Everyone is at each other's throats. The kingdom is broken into factions with no real leader taking charge. Nothing short of a miracle will get everyone to work together."
Owen and Zara share a look, but neither one of them says anything more. They come to a stop before the tents, and Talon points to one of the nearby campfires.
"Supper will be served over there," he says. "Stew, probably. It isn't very tasty, but at least it's warm. I have a good relationship with the quartermaster, though. I bet I can get us a few pints to wash away the dust of the road."
"That's a very kind offer," Zara replies, "but it's been a long and taxing journey. I'd like to rest before meeting with the Conclave tomorrow."
"I think I should get an early night as well," Owen says, offering a weary smile. "Sorry, Tal." Crossing his arms, Talon frowns at them.
"Too tired for a drink? Nonsense! That's when you need a drink the most!"
A look of understanding suddenly crosses his face.
"Oh, I see. You'd rather snog each other than spend quality time with me, is that it?" "Huh! I can't say I'm surprised. You've gotten used to your privacy out in the wastes."
Owen glares at him, and Zara's cheeks instantly flush a deep crimson. Talon raises his arms, attempting a suitably contrite look.
"Only kidding. Hells, lighten up, you two. I suppose you do need a good night's sleep. Still, one of these days I want to get a good and proper drunk with the both of you. I expect there's a few stories you haven't told me yet, and a little ale will help tease them out."
"Good night, Talon," Zara says in irritation. "And thank you for bringing us here."
He sweeps a courtly bow.
"Of course, Magus. All in a good day's work."
He turns on his heel and departs, making for the quartermaster's tent. Owen and Zara may not be interested in carousing with him, but there are those in camp he will find interested in having a good time.
"Best to make every night count," he thinks, reaching down absently to rub the spot where his hand should be. "Never know which one may be my last."